So I grew up in a small town in the middle of the cornfields. It was Pocahontas, Iowa, and I was the granddaughter of the only people in town that had a double bike. It was large, was a Schwinn, and it was red and white striped. This is not it. And riding around behind my grandmother through the town, I never knew where I was going, and I didn't care. I had no control over the direction of the double bike on the back seat, and that was fine with me. I could only add my effort to the ride when the pedals were at the top, because at that point I was very short, okay? Now I can always touch the pedals. I had to work with my grandmother, joining my energy with hers in cooperation. I had my grandmother's ear also, and this was a rarity because my grandmother was a major talker. She just turned 100, and my grandfather always told the story that he had to kick her under the table whenever he wanted to talk so that he could say something. So she talked nonstop. But I knew, riding around behind my grandmother, that she loved she loved me. So I trusted that wherever she was going was fine, and I knew she was in control. So the ride was fun and relaxing. So recently, as I was thinking about riding around with my grandmother, I thought about how I want that same type of relationship that I had with my grandmother on the double bike with God. It was then that I read the yoking parable in Matthew 11, 28 through 30, and it goes like this. Come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So basically what happened is that I ended up combining my memories of riding around with my grandmother with this yoking parable. And I came up with what I now call the double bike parable. And this is written in Jesus calling style. So Jesus is talking to us. And it goes like this. Are you tired, burned out, carrying around too many worries and cares? Come with me. Hop on the back seat. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. Let me steer. I've been down this road before, so I know where I'm going. Watch how effortlessly I drive and relax. My way is easy. I will guide you through life, and I promise, with me as your pilot, no trip will be too much. Talk with me as we ride. I am always thrilled to listen. If you get too tired, lift your feet and let me do the work. Feel the breeze. Know that I am in control. And find rest for your soul. After all, my ride is easy and my burden is light. So for the next 30 minutes, we're going to imagine this double bike as representing your life. And we're going to look more deeply at the spiritual principles associated with this parable. So, I'm going to introduce you first to the parts of the double bike. First, we have, my daughter did all the designing, by the way, all these things. So first, we have the seat. And the seat represents what or who do you get behind. As women, I know you're probably just as busy as I am. We're cooks, we're cleaners, we're laundry women often. I'm also an author. I'm a creative director of Pearls of Promise Ministries. I have so many things tearing me in so many directions that I get way behind, obviously. And I don't necessarily think, when I was reflecting on this, I don't think necessarily we need to be doing less. I mean, sometimes we do. But for me, a lot of times the stress is not physical, it's more mental, that I'm going in all these different directions. So while pedaling on your double bike is still moving and you're still working, okay? So I think I already said that, okay? So to me, the answer lies in what I get behind or my focus. When I focus on what God wants me to do in any situation, I am going one direction, not 100. So I believe focusing on God's direction removes some of the craziness from my life. So again, the C represents what or who do we get behind. The second, we have the chain. Here's the chain. A couple years ago, one time, my friend Jackie, who came last night, came over to go on a double bike ride with me. We took the double bike out of the garage. We sat our derrières on the seat, readied our feet on the pedal, and the pedal gave way and fell to the ground. Now, if you've ever been on a bike, when the chain comes off, you know what that feels like. There's no resistance. So I got off the double bike expecting to put the chain back on, and I blinked. There was nothing there. The chain was not nor towards the front or the back. And mind you, that chain is a big chain. It's about this long, okay? So my mind was reeling. Like, what could have happened to this chain? How does a double bike chain disappear? Because they're welded together chains. So there's only one real explanation in our house, and that's Dennis the Menace. And in our house, his name is Ben. So when 12-year-old Ben, he was 12 at the time, came home from school, I asked him, I was talking to him about the sad situation, you know. Someone broke into our garage, stole the chain, and left the double bike. But he did not confess at this point. So I said to him, Ben, I need your help. What would somebody use a double bike chain for? Well, he did not even hesitate for a millisecond. He said it would make the perfect Chinese whipping chain. So he had been watching like that ancient warrior show, had seen that, and scouring the garage for an item, had found the bike chain. So while the bike chain is not the first thing you notice about a double bike, it is the first thing you notice when it's missing, because your effort is not connected to anything. So again, this chain represents what are you connecting your effort to? We are all busy, but what are we busy for? And the next one is the pedal. Okay, and this represents, are you putting on the brakes or are you adding your effort to something? The pedals on the double bike have a feature that you might not know if you haven't ridden one. Who has ridden a double bike before, by the way? Oh, quite a few of you, okay. The pedals go around together. So if you're on the back seat of the double bike and we're going down a hill and we're going too fast and you get scared, you can stop pedaling. And I can't pedal in the front either. You will stop the pedals for both of us. And I feel like sometimes in my life, this is what I do with God. You know, my life gets going too fast or it's too full, and I'm like, wait. You know, I don't want my life to be too full or too busy. One biblical example of this is in Numbers 13, 26 through 30. It talks about the Israelites and going to explore the land that God has told them to take possession of. And they're scared, you know, and they don't want to do it. They see all the people as giants. You can almost hear the pedals stopping or the brakes squealing. Another aspect of the pedal is adding effort. When my kids were little, I used to ride to Forest Vista, which was about 2 miles from our house, to pick them up on the double bike. And so one time I had the double bike and then a bike carrier behind it. And I was riding to get Ben, who is 8, Holly, who was 6 at the time, and Holly's friend, Emily. And the basic thing was Ben was supposed to ride on that seat. The two girls were supposed to ride in the bike carrier. But when I got there, Emily folded her arms and said, I'm not getting in that. That's for babies. So Ben and Holly had to ride in the bike carrier, and Emily, whose feet were like that far from the pedal, wrote on that seat. So I'm riding down the trail with this huge rig. And of course, Emily could offer no assistance, and I knew I wasn't going to make it. So Ben had to periodically hop out of the bike carrier, push from behind it, and then while it was going, jump back in. Okay. So for the double bike to move at a good speed, it requires effort from the person on the back seat. And God also wants us to do some work. I'm an author, and I can't just pray, dear God, help me to get published, and then sit around doing nothing, right? There is a quote from The Circle Maker. I don't know if any of you have read that book. And it says, work like it depends on you, and pray like it depends on God. Again, the pedal represents putting on the brakes or adding effort. Lastly, we have the handlebars. Aren't they cute? and that represents, are you fighting for control? If you've never ridden on a double bike, you might not know, but the back handlebars have no connection to a wheel. They don't move at all. That doesn't mean that someone on the back seat doesn't try to drive the double bike, even though they can't drive the double bike. My mother always tells a story about my paternal grandfather or grandmother. She came to visit one time. She was a large, heavy-set woman who wasn't very athletic, and I don't think she had ridden a double bike or a bike in general very much. And my mother said that was the worst double bike ride she had ever given because she was so nervous and she was throwing her weight from one side to the other, trying to control where we were going. She had absolutely no positive effect on the direction. She just made it miserable and more stressful, right? So the same goes for us. Sometimes we are trying desperately to control our lives with handlebars that aren't connected to the wheel. So I'm going to review these real quick. The seat represents who or what do you get behind. The chain is what are you connecting your effort to. The pedals is, are you putting on the brakes or adding effort? And the handlebar is, are you fighting for control? Okay, now I'm going to go to the rules of riding the double bike. Recently, my son started high school, so it's been a really fun year. One night, we couldn't pick him up from a soccer game. Actually, we were at the Treach Valentine's Day dance that night. But we had clearly given him instructions before we went about the rules of who he should ride home with. We're like, you should ride home with a responsible adult driver. And I even talked to a few that said they would bring him home. Instead, he decided to ride home with someone barely out of diapers. Okay, so we as parents know how terrified, I mean, we were so mad. We as parents know how important who our children ride home with is, right? It's also very important who we decide to get on the double bike with and who we ride behind in our lives. So we have rules for the tandem. They're called the tandem riding rules. So these are the rules, and I'm going to say, they're on your sheet, too, if you can't see them up here. My daughter did this lovely poster. But anyway, so the first rule is experience rules. So whoever has the most experience should be on the front seat. The second one is only ride with trusted drivers. If you don't trust somebody to be a good driver, don't get on the back seat. The third next one is no back seat drivers. Since you trust someone, right, you shouldn't try to control it from the back seat. Next is cooperate. Like we talked about the pedals going around together, cooperate with your driver. Don't try to stop her or him from going where they're going. On the nexus, add oomph to your ability. When you're little, you can only add a little bit of oomph, right? Your feet aren't always on the pedals. As you grow, you can add more and more energy to the ride. And last is chat it up. Something you might not notice about the double bike is the mouth of this person is very close to the ear of the person in front. So when you're riding, when I was riding with my kids, they were always talking to me. So now that you know the rules, I'm going to ask you a few questions to see if you understand the rules. Okay, so if you are sitting on the back of the bike and you see a pothole coming up on the right side, should you lean to the left to try to avoid it? No. Okay. If my 13-year-old daughter and I go for a double bike ride, who should drive? Very good. Okay, so if you are feeling energetic and I take you for a ride and we are going up a hill, should you put out your legs and say we and not help me? Okay, so I think you understand the rules. And if you said yes to that, I'm not giving you a double bike ride, okay? So remember what I said about at the beginning about the double bike representing your life. So we've talked about the parts and then we talked about the rules. So now we're going to talk about who or what you let drive your double bike. So I'll start with myself. So technically, if we're Christians, we know what the right answer is here, right? Just like in Sunday school, what's the right answer? Jesus, okay? But in reality, I don't think our lives sometimes look that way. And of course, none of us are perfect, and I'm not saying this to make anyone feel bad, because actually, I was saying last night that when I started working on this speech, I did start kind of feeling bad about it myself, when I really looked at how much Jesus was in control of my life, how much was he really driving my double bike. My time with God sometimes was in the morning. You know, he was driving my time because I was doing devotional. And when I would pray, or if I was having a really big issue, I would let him drive. But often the rest of the time I wasn't. But I think this yoking parable from Jesus, of course, is not meant to make us feel bad. It's meant to offer relief and less stress for our lives. He is saying, yoke yourself with me and I will take the burden. I will carry the heavy load. And don't we all need a little bit less stress in our lives? See, since I've signed up to do this talk, it's been about a month or a month and a half ago, I've really had a lot of stress. I had 2 cancer scares. I had weeks of insomnia where I was hardly sleeping at all, mostly related to teenager trouble, and tons of teenager trouble. Through some work with a very talented Christian counselor who happens to be over here if you need a name, I realized a lot of my trouble related to me being in the driver's seat, that I was trying to control everything. I was trying to control my son, especially, everything he thought, said, or did. I was trying to even control whether or not I had cancer by how I was thinking. And I was trying to control my sleep. And if any of you have ever had insomnia, if you're trying to control your sleep, you really don't get any. So I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would be thinking about all these things that I hadn't done that would somehow make some huge difference to someone, especially my children. And I realized that I had kind of made myself the master of their universe, and that is God's place. So I was definitely trying to drive my own double bike, and I was not only trying to drive my own double bike, I think I was trying to especially drive my son's double bike also. So if you can imagine, I'm sitting on the front seat with one hand on this steering wheel, I'm reaching over on his double bike too, and I'm trying to steer his. And you can tell, you can see how I would get so stressed out. I come from a family of what I would call brainiacs. My sister's children are all brilliant. I don't know if any of you can relate to that. But when Ben started high school and pulled a few B's his first semester, I morphed into intense, crazy, pushy mommy. And so I even remember a few times when he would be in the bathroom too long, knocking on the door, you know, hurry up, hurry up. You got to get on that homework. You know, it's usually math. Math is waiting. Biology is waiting. So one night I woke up at about 2 o'clock in the morning. You're just like, I don't know if you've ever done that. Worried about him. And I clearly heard God say, you know, give it to me. I love God more than you do. So the next day, throughout the day, every time that little worry came into my head, I prayed instead. And at the end of that day, when I picked him up from a soccer game, he said to me, Mom, I'm tired of getting bad grades. So it wasn't because I was pushing him. It was because God was working on changing his heart. Like I said earlier, during my kids' elementary school years, I used to ride the bike to school. I would sometimes drop them off and ride it home without anyone on the back seat. And invariably, someone would think it was very cute to say, "You lost someone?" Okay? And I think a lot of times before we become Christians, that's how our ride looks like, right? We're on the front, and this is a big rig to ride by yourself. You know, it takes a lot of energy. You know, we're on the front and no one's on the back seat. But I think when we become Christians, sometimes our lives don't look a lot different. Bill Bryant, in an article at Campus Crusade for Christ, talks about the self-directed life and how it's possible to still have it even when we are Christians. And I think it looks like this, if I can get on. So we're riding along, we're steering, turning left and right, and we see a potential pothole coming up, and we pray, right? Dear God, help me not to get stuck in that pothole. That's the worst kind of pothole there is. And then we continue on, and we see a crack, and we say, Dear God, help me to not get hurt. And then we see a person in need off to the side, and we're like, Dear God, help that person, but I'm really busy. I got to be somewhere at 2 o'clock. And then we come to road construction, and we have to stop. And we're angry at the delay, and we say, Dear God, why are you doing this to me? You know how much I have to do. So we send up, thank you, Diana. So we send up what I call, if I can get off without falling here, we send up what I call this and that prayers. Dear God, help me with this. Help me with that. But we still fight mightily to be in that front seat. So that's with ourself as the driver. The next thing is sometimes someone or something else can be in the front seat. Now I have to take a deep breath here because I just pedaled on the bike. I guess I'm out of shape. So sometimes someone or something else can be in the front seat. When I first moved here for 3 years, I had really bad panic and anxiety attacks. And I think that, I know that that's what drove my life. I mean, anxiety was in the front seat. Every single decision I made was based on whether or not it would make me feel anxious. I wouldn't go with friends into Dallas, like if they wanted to go somewhere, because I was worried about getting stuck there and having a panic attack and not being able to get home. I didn't like to fly because it made me feel claustrophobic, so I flew very, very rarely. And it slowly but surely shut down really every aspect of my life. And I think a lot of times we have something in our lives that drives a lot of our decisions. For some people it's success, it could be drugs, and it's very obvious. Sometimes that's very easy to see with drugs. But sometimes it's the opinions of others, maybe the approval of mom or dad, looks, having a nice house. There's a lot of different things. And when we make decisions, sometimes we give that the first say. When we had trouble having biological children and we decided to adopt from China, I was still having panic attacks at the time. And we almost didn't go get the children. I almost didn't say yes to that when my husband wanted to do that. Because getting on that plane and flying to China was the most terrifying thing I've ever had to do. Because I was still somewhat agoraphobic at the time. It was scary for me to even leave the house. But I can't imagine what my life would be like if I had let my fear drive that decision and stop me from getting my children, Ben and Holly. So that's an example of someone or something else being in the driver's seat. So lastly, of course, we have Jesus in the front seat. And so at the beginning of this speech, I talked about wanting that same type of relationship I had with my grandmother on the double bike with Jesus. So how do we move towards that daily? I think by following the tandem rider rules. Okay, so the first one is experience rules. Like I rode on the back seat with my grandmother, I was a child, right? And so that I could be happy on the back seat. And I think Jesus wants us, and we know this biblically, that he wants us to be more like children. As it says in Matthew 18:3-5, truly I tell you, unless you change and become little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Notice it says little children, not teenagers. We know how teenagers are, a lot of us. They think they know everything, right? But isn't that somehow, at least for me, I think sometimes that's how I act with God. Like, I know best. I got this covered. You don't need to assist me. But this first rule really points us to laying down that I know best and acknowledging that God is better able to steer. Imagine yourself getting up in the morning, walking to the double bike with Jesus. Are you going to fight him to get on that front seat, or are you going to say, after you, and let him get on the front seat? So that's the first rule. The second rule is only ride with trusted drivers. This points us to consciously noting what is driving our life. And then, when you consciously note that, ask yourself, is this a trusted driver? I mean, in my case with my anxiety is obviously not a trusted driver. The third thing about this with riding with trusted driver is sometimes we have to work on trusting God. I think some of us grew up, me myself included, I grew up with a father that wasn't really there. So I have some trust issues related to that. But I have to make a habit of replacing fear or worry with trust, just like I did with that day with Ben when I was worried about him and his grade, and I kept praying and trusting God that he could handle it. So I was consciously replacing that fear with the trust. And also just being more aware of all the times that God has come through us and bringing those consciously to mind. Help us with that. So the next rule is no backseat drivers. Remember, the back handlebars do not work. Okay? This obviously applies to our life as well. We really don't have control over a lot of things. So we need to work on not taking control of the things we don't have control over. As you struggle with this, because this is easier said than done, remember my paternal grandmother on the back seat, throwing her weight to and fro, trying to control it, and she had absolutely no positive effect on the bike ride. She actually made it more dangerous and miserable. The next one is cooperate. The pedals obviously go around in sync, so the bike works best when both people are working together. Both people would be you and Jesus, right? Henry Blackaby in Experiencing God said, find out what God is doing and get involved. So what do you think God is doing in the world? I think, for myself, I think it's very simple. He is saving the world through love. So when we try to work on our own, sometimes for me anyway, I'm going a million different directions because I'm trying to do all these little things that really don't have a great effect. In those cases, the effort is too great. But when we try to work on what God is doing, on loving people, the rest of that busyness can fall away. The next one is add oomph to your ability. We as women often try to do it on our own, don't we? We rely on our own strength. But we're not meant to go through our life on our own, just as the double bike is not meant to be ridden by itself. When I'm riding it by myself, coming home from something, it's a lot of work. And it's very exhausting. But God is inexhaustible. I've recently had a lot of experiences with this because I've had insomnia. So I've had to ask God a lot for energy to do things. And I've also had to ask him a lot for energy to help me love people. God, I know, has inexhaustible love and inexhaustible energy, and he will give us that when we ask. Finally, we have chat it up. As I said before, the mouth of the person in back is close to Jesus' ear in front. We need to talk to Jesus about everything. Nothing is too small or too large. Recently, I was in New Orleans with my mother and my sister for my mother's 75th birthday. We were trying to find a chocolate croissant. Anyway, we knew the place of the best chocolate croissants, but we couldn't find it. So I prayed out loud, "Dear God, help us to find a chocolate croissant." And my mother and my sister both said, "God doesn't answer those types of prayers." But we did find a chocolate croissant. And I do think God answers even those types of prayers. I see it all the time in my son. I mean, he gets answers to prayers. Like, recently Jody called to see if we wanted to go out to eat. And Ben was in the bathroom at the time. And when he came out, I said, "Ben, do you want to go out to eat?" He's like, "I was just praying about that." So he gets answers all the time. She said, "You're going to have to leave him alone in the bathroom." There's a lot that goes in the bathroom in my house. Okay, so to allow Jesus to drive your double bike, follow the double bike rules. And I think you all have them on your sheet. So I'm going to end with acting out the parable. And my assistant is not here. So would somebody else like to come up and get on the double bike with me? Who's brave? Okay. Suzanne, well. Okay, wait. Remember, we have to, before we get on. Okay. So are you tired, burned out, carrying around too many worries and cares? Come with me. Try to go. Hop on the back seat. Karen last night needed a stool, but she, I don't know.
Wait a minute. Okay, are you sure you're safe?
Yeah.
I can't tip it over? Okay. Watch it tip over.
Okay. Okay. Hop on the back seat. Get away with me, and you'll recover your life. Let me steer, okay? I've been down this road before, and I know where I'm going. Watch how effortlessly I drive and relax. My way is easy. I will guide you through life. Whoops, I'm sorry, I'm falling off. And I promise, with me as your pilot, no trip will be too much. Talk with me as we ride.
Hi.
I am always thrilled to listen. If you get too tired, lift your feet and let me do the work. Feel the breeze, know that I am in control, and find rest for your soul. After all, my ride is easy and my burden is light.